Yadevi sarvabhuteshu matra rupena samstita namastasyai 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 namo namaha. Salutations to the Divine Mother, who exists in all beings as the Mother. Salutations to her, salutations to her, salutations, salutations. Our talk is called The Simple Truth. This talk is on Sri Sarada Devi, our Holy Mother. A senior Swami said of her, unlike other great saints who appear to be otherworldly, Mother swallowed the transcendental experience and manifested it in a very simple, highly spiritualized life in the thick of the world. She occupies a pedestal of her own as a real universal mother and as a perfect human being of the highest spiritual quality. She had the unique capacity to make everybody her own. She felt motherliness toward all. She accepted all as her own. We have heard that the Advaita Vedanta philosophy defines the highest transcendental experience as beyond the relativity of speech and mind. It is a showstopper explanation, and it is meant to be. Mind and speech have been left far behind, far behind. So, where does that leave us? Yet Mother swallowed the transcendental and simply led the highest spiritual life in the thick of our mind and speech world. The Swami calls her a perfect human being of the highest spiritual quality, with the capacity to make everybody, no exception, her own. He calls her a real universal mother. So we could say, Mother is the transcendental truth embodied in down-to-earth simplicity and expressed as universal motherhood. I looked up the word simple in the dictionary. It refers to a very rich spectrum of qualities. Here are a few. Uncomplicated, straightforward, clear, undemanding, unpretentious, unassuming, natural, basic. All of these qualities can easily refer to Mother. Mother would encourage her disciple children to simply live in this world communing with God. She would thread the name of God through her endless daily routine tasks. And so, what we might call our mundane chores, Mother converted into a quiet absorption of worship. Japa was the heart of her daily life. She told her niece Nalini she was able to repeat the name of God 100,000 times daily in the midst of her incessantly active duties at Dakshineswar. Spiritual teachers say the name of God is the reality, the truth of God. The dictionary's first entry for the word truth is the quality of state of being true. The first entry under true is in accordance with fact or reality. The truth of Sri Sarada Devi, her life is the simple fact of being true to her divine self. Ramakrishna had worshipped her as the Divine Mother and offered at her feet the fruit of all his spiritual realizations. He realized the true divine reality of all persons and the true reality of the whole variegated world. Mother was therefore true to the reality that Sri Ramakrishna saw in all living beings and in this world. We believe she is an incarnation of Divine Mother. Incarnation? From the one infinite ocean of divine being, from the infinite heart of this universe, the human forms of Sri Sarada Devi and Sri Ramakrishna bodied forth in our human world. We all have this infinite ocean of God, of spiritual light, within our hearts. Our outer forms may be small wavelets from that ocean, whereas Mother and Ramakrishna are huge tsunami waves. Still, the same water of life flows through us. Our need is to touch that water in ourselves and touch that water within what is right here before us every day of our lives, because that water is the simple truth of life. The incarnations and all the enlightened ones come to awaken us to the truth that we are more than just physical and mental beings. We are truly spiritual beings and need to deal with the world's physical and mental variety in a spiritual way. Simplicity and truth manifest in our lives as we grow in detachment and renunciation. These two big qualities of character are the seeds the spiritual teachers plant in us. Gradually, detachment and renunciation will fully flower in our lives as our inner wisdom, and outer unselfishness. Mother's life is so deceptively ordinary to our outward eyes. No exciting events, no big achievements, but our inner eyes bow down again and again to her life. We sense that we make things complicated and burdensome because we haven't yet trained ourselves enough in an inner approach to our lives. When we learn to detach from the surface of life, this mental and physical surface, we grow in detachment. We don't throw away our bodies and minds in the nearest compost bin. We learn to see the possibilities of how we can make use of our bodies and minds in a spiritual way. Mother taught her children to live life always relying on the inner ocean of God. She taught her children that every small detail of their life, including themselves, actually belong to God. God is the reality of everything in this world. This is the meaning of renunciation. She said the secret of happiness is renunciation. By satisfying our ego, our senses, in selfish ways, we cover our true joy. Mother instilled renunciation in both householder and monastic disciples. The everyday details of their outer modes of life were different. But at heart, all of life had only one purpose, to bring the God of our own hearts into our life. Mother's inner world was completely full, undivided. She could manage the infinite details of her troublesome and complicated household with keen, clear insight. She was totally and simply practical. Her life was a constant flow of meeting the needs of all those around her in the midst of persistent family demands. She ran her large extended household with loving care and meticulous efficiency. She was also alert to the needs of her native village of Jayarambati. Her same loving, alert attention to all is found equally in her Kolkata life. We no doubt have heard these examples from her life in Jayarambati, but they can bear repeating. She arranged through Swami Saradananda to have a well dug at Jayarambati for the villagers so that the villagers could have clean drinking water. She arranged for a primary school to be started in Jayarambati. A maid in her house had a grandson, the son of an illiterate farmer. She advised her maid to send this boy to school. He graduated from Kolkata University and became the headmaster of a large high school. Every year at the proper time, she arranged to have annual necessities bought from the local markets when they were at the cheapest rate. She had her disciples buy paddy during harvest season because it was the cheapest rate then. She directed a disciple to oppose the tax on her newly constructed house in Jayarambati by clearly stating it was a religious institution. Before the rainy season, she arranged to collect firewood for cooking. She arranged to repair doors and windows and mud walls and thatched roofs of their huts. And she never wasted anything. Cow dung was collected for fuel. The wrapping from parcels was saved for the pairings of vegetables and fruits. The foamy water from the boiled rice was saved and given to the cows. Leftover dal was given to beggars and the remains to the cows. And wherever she lived, she was the constant unifying, mediating power of any community around her and of her large and troublesome family. The thing to notice here is Mother didn't feel that her countless demanding responsibilities were being imposed on her. They were a natural part of herself, a natural part of her life here. Ordinarily, we feel things and persons are external to us. We feel external causes push us and pull us so that our minds remain scattered and not peaceful or focused. Mother's life teaches us to open our understanding to non-separateness. There is nothing outside ourselves to control us unless we yield to being controlled externally. Gradually detaching ourselves from external separateness, we realize our inner unity with all. Our minds become free to center ourselves in our own individual purpose. We feel unified. We feel whole, integrated, and can then move freely through the varied situations of our life and our contacts with others. Mother's life shows us that inner unity will unify us with everything and everyone around us. This outer world is the world of concrete distinctions. That is the fabric of sense experience. I am actually separate from everything and everyone else. The simple truth is we don't need to live only in the senses. We need to touch the unity in and through all the separation that our senses bring us. Mother is the living example before us, experiencing in life the inner spiritual unity permeating this universe. We are seeking some form of at-oneness with our outer world. We don't like feeling isolated from all else. Isolation makes us feel dissatisfied and peaceless. We want to feel relaxed and comfortable, to feel at home with the details of our life, inner and outer. Mother said, contentment was the greatest treasure. And the key to that contentment is finding unity in where we live, and in the people we live with, and in the work entrusted to us. We see Mother rising every morning around 3 o'clock, quickly finishing her physical needs, and spending the early hours in meditation and japa. She then enters into a day of incessant work, incessant service, and of incessantly accommodating herself to the demands and needs of all those around her with a mind calm and balanced, and with a picture of bliss in her heart. She retires at 11 o'clock or later. Usually we go after what we like and avoid what we don't like. Ramakrishna calls likes and dislikes the two highwaymen, because they rob us of clear sight. A strong person doesn't run away from the unpleasant, doesn't avoid the unpleasant. The world is made up of the pairs of opposites. That is the nature of this world. Remaining even-minded in the midst of them is what the Gita calls skill in action. Mother's life is so full of hardships, she never avoided them. She was not overcome by them. She was content wherever she lived and accepted the circumstances of each place. She never sought only pleasant things. Mother never blamed others or outside circumstances for her misfortunes. She would say, "We suffer as a result of our own actions. It is unfair to blame others. We find fault with others by bringing down our minds to that fault level." Mother was definite about finding fault. She would say, "Does anything ever happen to another if you enumerate his faults? It only injures you." When we are trapped in difficult situations or faced with difficult people, our natural tendency is to blame something or someone else for our unhappiness. It becomes a habit to make critical judgment on the people and situations around us. Most of us can see this tendency in ourselves. And we also see, with a little introspection, that we actually end up putting judgment on ourselves. Our own negative thoughts have put us in a mental straitjacket, and we are not able to move freely in the circumstances of our lives. Mother wanted us to make all effort to conquer the tendency of fault-finding. We know her last words were, "If you want peace of mind, my child, do not find fault with others, rather see your own faults." By not judging others, by working on correcting our shortcomings, we become more even-minded, more clear-minded. We will then be living with an inner attitude of improving ourselves instead of improving others, and looking to learn good habits from everyone. It is a slow process of self-correction. Mother emphasized, steady building of character is the foundation of spiritual life. Spiritual life is transforming our inner life, because the condition of our minds is everything. Mother had the power of clear reflection because she was never controlled by externals. She made the whole world her own through her identity with Ramakrishna. She relied on him and felt his living reality as her own being. She saw Ramakrishna in all living beings. She related to a young disciple one afternoon, "Do you know what I saw one day? I saw that Master was imminent in every being. Wherever I looked, I saw him everywhere. Then it dawned on me that the creation was his. Every creature was he. Men do not suffer. It is he who suffers. That is why I am compelled to liberate all who come crying for it so piteously. I serve him and his own beings." Once, a young monk asked Mother how she looked upon him. She replied, "I look upon you as Narayana." The boy was disappointed. "Then you don't see me as your son." Mother smiled, "I see you as Narayana as well as my son." Sri Ramakrishna said she was born to import knowledge to mankind, to humankind, and she was born to manifest to us the motherhood of God. The knowledge Mother imparted to us is truly to know what is the essence of life. Sarada means giver of the essence. Her life goes straight to the point of what is essence. We will agree that to know anything or anyone truly is to know the very heart, the very substance of anything or anyone. To really know anything or anyone, we become one with that person or thing. Our usual understanding of empathy is just that. We put our feet in others' shoes. We forget separation. Then we can enter the heart of another. Ramakrishna also said of her, she is born to manifest the motherhood of God, because knowing the heart of her child is the essence of true mother love. A child is essentially non-separate from its mother. In the care of her child, a mother forgets her own needs and comforts. She will undergo any personal inconvenience and hardship for her child's welfare. This is ideal human love, ideal mother love. And all human mothers are focused toward that ideal. A mother's life awesomely demands her endless patience and endurance in trying to deal with the growing pains of her child. Many saints in our Ramakrishna tradition have given testimony to the fact that there is a mother heart at the core of the universe. Mother love is simply a quality of heart. It is far beyond physical gender. In one of Swami Vivekananda's talks, he says, "Infinite unselfishness is the real, the only living power in existence." That could be a fitting epithet for the motherhood of God. Mother's life is a concrete example. Mother's life demonstrated that renunciation of selfishness is the essence of our life, is the essence of what gives our human heart fulfillment. The truth is, our life, If we care for anyone or anything to the extent that we forget our own outer needs, comforts, and conveniences, we touch, at least a little, the heart in ourselves, the very center of ourselves, the ocean of caring, of giving, that lies in our hearts naturally comes forth when our surface selfishness is removed. The essential quality of detachment from selfishness grows through unselfishness. We have all verified this in our own lives. We can see how detachment is growing in our life. Life is ups and downs. They teach us not to be choosy what we want every moment. Life never gives us what we want all the time anyway. For our equanimity of mind, we grow in accepting this. We grow in patience and endurance. Good things come, bad things come. We learn not to immediately dance positively or negatively to their tunes. We learn not to fight suffering. We feel we may as well accept the fact that suffering is a part of life. So we gain an inner calmness and balance, no longer controlled by our old dislikes and likes. A tangible sense of separation from our physical and mental ups and downs grows in us. We feel more and more separated from physical suffering, hunger, and fatigue. They no longer reach us with the same intensity, and our mental desires for wanting to gain something externally and our fears of losing what we have gained, they're no longer so strong. We are slowly extracting our inmost being from our outer being. The teachers say, as the conscious light of the ego eye becomes gradually free from attachment to mental and physical conditions, we begin to sense we are spiritual beings. In Ramakrishna's terms, we are evolving from our unripe ego into our ripe ego. The Mundaka Upanishad begins with this question: what is that one thing by knowing all this becomes known? Is there just one thing, one knowledge? One knowledge that brings us the substance of everything and everyone? We don't usually think this way. We have a habit of working through a lot of varied complications, feeling that is what makes things stimulating and interesting. If things aren't complicated, they are sort of boring. Mother's life shows us the one thing to be known is not boring. The Taittiriya Upanishad speaks of it as the spiritual ground of our life. The word used is the rasa of existence. The meaning, the substance, the flavor, the vitality of our being. It is the essence of joy. The Upanishad asks, who could even breathe if this blessedness were not in the air? And continues, becoming grounded in this invisible, unutterable identity, transcending the small, separate self, we become fearless and know what true joy is. That one knowledge, that rasa of life, is oneness, is love. In our human life, love is first confined on the level of physical and mental human relationships. We gradually learn through experience to bring more and more unselfishness into our human relations. Our understanding matures and deepens, our emotions mature and deepen. There is a section in Swami Saradeshananda's beautiful book, Mother as I Saw Her, called Love as the Sustaining Principle in Life. In the Swami's early years, he was the boy Gopesh who served Mother in her village of Jayavamati. He daily witnessed Mother's relations with all manners of persons and saw how she effortlessly accommodated herself to all, how she actually became one with each. Musing about this quality of Mother, he began to see its partial manifestation in all human relations. One day, walking to a nearby village on an errand for Mother, he saw a tall, dark-skinned man covered in dust, his clothes torn and dirty, tending a large herd of buffaloes through the meadows and jungles under the scorching afternoon sun. He had stopped to take in his arms a little baby girl handed to him by his wife. Both mother and child were also clad in threadbare rags. He hugged his daughter tightly and bent down to kiss her head, then returned her to her mother. He hurried along behind the running buffaloes and kept turning with tear-filled eyes to see the spot where his little daughter was nestled in the arms of her mother. He had taken that arduous job all for the sake of caring for this little child. His heart was bound to her welfare even while running through meadows and jungles behind a herd of buffaloes. That rasa of his heart is what sustained his life. When the boy Gopesh in later life had become Swami Saradeshananda, he could compare this human love with the love he had experienced in the company of Mother. The love of that poor herder of buffaloes for his child through the years would need to grow, to evolve. His daughter would probably sooner or later leave her parental home. He would need to feel joy for her happiness in her new home. To whom did his daughter really belong? Gopesh had received Mother's love. As a boy in his teens and as a young sadhu, he had experienced the fact that her love had no need to grow. It was full in itself. Human love is of the same substance as divine love, but begins with restricting that flow of heart to the outer physical and mental forms of a few persons, and then gradually expands and matures to deepen and feel that deeper substance of those same persons. In the case of Mother, she was the full rasa of life. She was the full rasa of existence spoken of in the Taittiriya Upanishad. She was literally the embodiment of the rasa of life, the essence of life. She was born to exemplify that essence to us. Mother's life was absorbed in Ramakrishna's being. That was the key to her capacity for entering the heart of everyone. How can we have this absorption of heart, this absorption in our spiritual ideal? In the words of Sri Ramakrishna, we have to ripen our unripe egos. It is our sense of being small, separate beings that causes all our selfish possessiveness. We think we own things and people, we own our actions, and we own the fruits of our actions, etc., etc. But we can free our sense of I from rigid, self-separate possessiveness and divisions. Of course, it is not easy. Do we truly value things we can just grab up and snap with the snap of our fingers? We value what we've worked hard for. We can gradually feel the freedom of absorbing ourselves and whoever and whatever is before us, of absorbing ourselves in our spiritual ideal. The eye of our hearts begins to open. Mother encouraged her disciples to always remain active, to avoid being idle. Work fends off selfish thought and gives us practice in offering our efforts to God. Work gives us practice in not expecting anything from the world for what we do, because if we expect something, then the world controls us. As Mother said, we ourselves belong to God, and what we call our own belongs to God. She gave a homely example of Ramakrishna's. He watched the ducks floating in Kamarpakur's Haldar pond. They would come on land and shake off every drop of water on them. We can live in the world this way, in the midst of worldly possessions and preoccupations, be able to shake off attachment for them just like that. We live in the pond of this world, but our divine ground underlies the pond and is all around the pond. We can step on that ground whenever we wish and shake off our attachments like so many drops of water. We will be like a lotus leaf, unaffected by the water of attachment, as Sri Krishna tells Arjuna in the Gita. We see in Mother's life the greatest detachment gave her the deepest power to absorb herself, to unify herself with the heart of everyone. Swami Vivekananda equates attachment with human love. We need this mighty power of love, of attachment, to throw our whole soul into an object, losing our separate identity, combined with the power of detachment. The power to love, the power to give, is rooted in detachment. Mother could attach herself fully to any work, to any person, to any situation, and remain non-attached. Without personal possessiveness, without a selfish motive, our work is free. We can handle anything, take responsible care of anything, knowing nothing belongs to us, knowing that everything and everyone in this world belongs to God. We can then have the power of truly giving to others, seeing the needs of others, of caring for others. One day, a young disciple of Mother asked her, "Are you the mother of all?" Mother replied, "Yes." "Even of birds and animals?" "Yes, of these also." To love and serve equally the wicked and the perfectly, I didn't finish that. So the birds and animals all were her children, to even her famous statement, "I am the mother of the wicked as I am the mother of the virtuous." To love and to serve equally the wicked and the perfectly good really represents the whole possible of love. Most of us would say it transcends our human capacity and so reveals Mother's divine nature. As Swami Sardananda said of her, "I have never seen such power of attachment in anyone nor such power of detachment. This was Mother's genius. Unity, oneness is simplicity. It is the basic foundation of all variety. It is the truth, the reality of variety. The early Vedanta seers, through their deeply concentrated minds, traced all differences to their root oneness. When we find that ocean of oneness in our heart, each of us finally realizes our full, distinct individuality. And it seems a contradiction, but when we become our whole, distinct, individual being, we find the truth of variety, of differentiation. We are able to enjoy, to appreciate the infinite variety of individual expression around us. It is seeing differences only on the surface that causes all the trouble and complication. All the distinctions are but variations in the ocean of our own hearts. In realizing this, we live freely with diversity in and through oneness, in and through unity. We become Jivanmuktas, free while living. Is there anything higher? It depends on our point of view. We can speak of degrees of samadhi. Yes, in terms of the science of controlling the vrittis, the waves of the mind, the waves gradually become one wave. And in the highest samadhi, this world vanishes. Our body and accustomed mind vanish along with it. The salt doll enters the ocean. It is beyond, the realization is beyond the reach of speech and mind. And yet, our Ramakrishna tradition gives us an added perspective, a perspective that has always existed in the spiritual life of mankind. Mother's life gives us that added perspective. Ramakrishna gives us a beautiful, simple example. We climb and climb up the steps of a ladder, looking at the roof so far above us. We finally reach the roof and we're surprised. The ladder is made of the same material as the roof. Ramakrishna calls coming back to this world from the roof, vijnana, fuller knowledge of God, intimate knowledge of God. Mother's life highlights the truth of vijnana. We can appreciate the incomprehensibly high transcendental experience through the terms of mother's life. We have the boundless divine ocean within our hearts and are surrounded by that ocean. How will we measure the ocean's waves? Surely small wavelets like us are not the same height as the tsunami waves of divine incarnations. But if we put aside our measuring the height of those waves and go to the ocean's water, there is only one roof of sky over all the waves, big and small. And from this standpoint, we can also appreciate the difference between the big waves and the small waves. Mother's life is giving us this living water of oneness, of unity, of the one reality of all the waves. We will remember the senior Swami's quote at the beginning of this talk. He said Mother had swallowed the transcendental experience and manifested it in her simple, highly spiritualized life. Mother's extraordinary, yet simply ordinary example of everyday living is our heritage. In closing, here is an enchanting scene among the hundreds of enchanting scenes in Mother's life, giving us a portrait, a living portrait, of how the transcendental can come to us in our human terms. This scene was witnessed by the future Bharati Prana, the first president of Sarada Madan Mission. Radhu, Mother's troublesome niece, had behaved very badly, and Mother had had it. She warned Radhu, "I am going to give you a thrashing." Radhu began to laugh and ran away laughing as Mother ran after her, her hair flying behind her. Finally, she caught up with Radhu and, taking her by the shoulders, lifted her hand to give her a blow. Then Mother saw Radhu's joyful face. That face prompted Mother's inner divinity to come forth. The ocean of divine unity that was Mother's true nature immediately came forth. She began to laugh with Radhu. The hand lifted to punish landed on Radhu's back with caresses. We know Mother's last words were, "I tell you one thing, if you want peace of mind, do not find fault with others. Rather see your own faults. Learn to make the world your own. Your own. No one is a stranger. My child, this world is yours." And that's the simple truth. Mother Saraswati, please be pleased to remove the dullness from our hearts and endow us with keen and tranquil understanding. Om, peace, peace, peace.